Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
As some of our listeners know, I'm from Colorado. And so when you think of Colorado, you probably picture really excellent skiing and outdoor activities. Maybe it was the first state to localize weed. So it's not really the first place that would come to mind when they try and imagine someplace scary. But as beautiful and laid back as Colorado seems, it's got a pretty unforgiving and inhospitable edge to it. Beyond all the popular ski resorts and local breweries, there's vast remote prairies. There's the formidable Rocky Mountains and the Colorado Front Range. The weather can change suddenly. You can start off on a hike one morning, beautiful and sunny, only to be in the middle of a snowstorm by the early afternoon, stuck wearing shorts, cut off from all help, with no cell reception. So Colorado may not have the colonial spooks like the Jersey Devil or specters like the ghost pirate ships that you hear about on the East Coast. Instead, Colorado horror is born out of a sense of isolation, realizing that what you expected to be normal actually isn't. It's just like that nasty shift from a sunny day to sudden snow. Colorado horror to me is that slow burn, where you think you're safe in some mundane place, only to find out you've become stranded. You've wandered a bit too far away from your herd, and now you're lost, with nothing around you for miles. The sun is setting and snow is starting to fall. Take, for instance, Riverdale Road, a 11-mile thoroughfare connecting the town of Thornton to Brighton. Now, there's not a lot to it. It's a rural road, and it's just that. It's a road. There's not a lot happening in those 11 miles. There's agricultural farm that's just starting to get built up by land developers. There's homes popping up, fences, skeletal trees. Riverdale Road is just sort of plain and desolate. You should check it out on Google Maps. If you were driving, there's a good chance you wouldn't be overwhelmed by its scenery. The road itself, just two lanes. It does have some tight turns, but nothing too dangerous. That is until you learn it's been referenced as one of America's most haunted locations. This little mundane stretch of 11 miles that looks like the normal way just to get someplace, by all counts, is pretty deceiving. A lot of places are known for just that one phenomena, like your Jersey Devil or your Mothman. But not Riverdale Road. Oh no, just like Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, it's filled with weird events. Ghosts, satanic possession, human sacrifice. It's got a different spooky story for everyone. Riverdale Road is even supposedly the mortal home to the gates of hell. How can there be any truth to any of this? How did one rural road in the middle of the country get to gather so many weird stories? Well, Chris, get in, loser. We're going straight to hell by way of Riverdale Road.
Let's do this.
Chris, why do you think it's got to be always the most dull surroundings that sometimes inspire the most horrific things in our collective imagination?
You know, it's just, it's always, because the mundane is just part of our day-to-day lives. And so when something we're familiar with gets, you know, there's that old adage that we fear what we, you know, people fear the unknown. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think people, yeah, we fear the unknown. But what's really scary is when the known becomes different, becomes menacing.
The known known, yeah.
Yeah, it's when things, you know, your childhood home doesn't feel quite right. And there's a noise you can't explain. And there's scratching at the window. And, you know, it's those moments where, again, like, you know, when I think about being the most scared I've ever been as a kid, I think about being in my bedroom in my mom's house with, you know, scratching on the windows from, mm-hmm. or what I thought was scratching on the windows from outside, from trees or whatever. And, you know, wondering what's on the other side of the glass. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, if I just moved those, if I just moved the blinds away from the window, something could see me. What's out there? You know, it's those places that are supposed to be safe and supposed to be normal when they're not. That's the scariest.
Yeah. And I agree. I don't think I've traveled Riverdale Road, and I will be honest in saying I didn't know anything about it before we started talking about hometown horror. So I naturally Googled it and started looking into it and did the Google map trip of it. And it is literally looks like so many other roads in Colorado, probably Kansas, probably anywhere in the middle of the country. Like, you are literally traveling, you know, just two lanes, and there is nothing around. And Google Maps did a nice job of doing it sort of in the winter, but not the winter if it's snowy and pretty, but the winter where it's just sort of everything is desolate and it's the low winter sun. And it does look a little like, it looks a little foreboding, but it doesn't look, it just looks really mundane. It looks like, man, you know, you're just trying to get to use that road to get to wherever you're going. And I think that that's why it's so weird that, like, all of a sudden this really, you know, mundane, uninspiring kind of patch of land and transportation, all of a sudden, you know, there's not just one story about it, right? There's not just, like, the Riverdale Road Ripper or whatever, right? There's not that. There's, like, lots of them, lots of them. And real disjointed ones as well. Like, you can start off really slow. So, like, where to ease in the first couple of miles. These, like, most of the stories that come out of Riverdale Road have this, talk about this haunted and eerie feeling that covers the whole surrounding area. I don't know if it's a triangle. I'm sure it's got to be, right? But it's like this sort of, this desolateness in the area. The people that used to live there, they've moved, they've left behind sort of some empty structures, empty barns. There's sort of a ghost feeling to it. And it's talked about by Denver Ghost Hunter founder and director, Stephanie Smith, who swears by her experience there. And she said, "The first time I investigated Riverdale was many years ago. It was my first lead investigation, and I went out to the road to spot good sites that I thought would work for all of our team and some guest investigators. I was drawn to one part of the road. It was daylight, but there was just something about this spot. As the team psychic, I'm often asked to locate hotspots of activity." All right, so, you know, take what you want from, you know, from that, but, you know, it's, again, it's daylight and they're just in this rural road. That night, we went back to the location and I got out of my car and began to walk down the road. It seemed pretty quiet. You could hear oil drums beating in the fields, but other than that, it was quiet. I decided to walk on the other side of the road for a while. As I was walking, I could see someone ahead of me. The first thing I remember is they had on boots, but otherwise it was very shadowed. Now, I have seen ghosts, and this one just kept walking towards me. I kept trying to think rationally, but I got more nervous. And then that turned into panic, and at some point in my walk, I turned around and ran the other direction. I ran and ran from the shadow with the boots. Past my team, past the camera crew, past the cars, until my head cleared. On camera, they caught a white ball of light zooming past me. After a few minutes, I cleared my head and walked on the other side of the road. I felt fine, no trepidation at all. But every time I walked on the other side, I would still have that panicked feeling. This got me thinking. Maybe this was some sort of imprinted event that only I could see or feel if I stepped on it. So I began to get some volunteers on different nights and have them experiment. I told them nothing of my experience, just had them walk down the road for as long as they could and then come back and tell us what they felt or saw. Some reported seeing a shadowy figure. Others felt scared. Some ran back to the car. Some felt like they were being followed, and others just felt ill. We have it captured on video, EVPs and photographs. But the most compelling is the sound of footsteps behind you as you walk along the dark road. I have never found any historical evidence to support this story, but I keep looking. There are just too many people out there that had the same thing happen.
God.
Spooky road.
So sorry. Spooky.
Okay, so again, so like, you know, like what I love too is that they do get a white ball of light. So, you know, you have your orb, right? You have a ghost. You have a ghost wearing boots that's coming towards you. You kind of have people feeling ill, right? Which is very common with, you know, if you look at the, you know, other haunted phenomena, you feel ill, you feel nauseous, you feel all of a sudden intense kind of paranoia and panic. But then you cross the street and you're fine. You know, clearly this person felt something and kind of did a semi-scientific test to validate it.
Yeah, I think, you know, yeah, I think for all of this, we got to take people at their word. You know, yep. The scary thing, it's the fact that it's this old idea that like emotional energy or emotional trauma, because energy is just thrown around like garbage, right? It's like energy. Mm-hmm. But like the idea that strong emotions can leave an imprint on a place that you not only can you know, will you remember it as you go back there, but maybe other people in the same area would get the same vibe you did or could feel the kind of bad mojo that was left behind. Mm-hmm. It's just such a scary, the idea of like a ghost or something following you. The idea of something following you is so scary.
Yeah. Or walking towards you.
It's so scary. Yeah. Because it suggests that you're like, you hear stories about ghosts where it's sort of, you know, a ghost is almost like a playback of a memory. Mm-hmm. And that's not usually as scary to me, at least. You know, you see a ghostly woman standing on a rock looking out into the ocean, like, you know, oh, my lover will come back or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. less scary than the ghost like looking at you and being like, you're not him. Yeah, you're like, interaction. Oh, shit. Yeah. You know, that's a lot scarier, right? The interaction, the fact that the thing can see you and maybe do things to you and everything else. And, you know, this idea of this idea of like stretches of road or stretches of area that have this sort of bad feeling or negative vibe to them. Mm-hmm. I have lived in areas that are like this, where mm-hmm. there are, you know, there's cities, but then you get out into the sticks and there's not a lot out there.
Right.
And it's really easy to be driving along at night in an area where there's no cell service, where there is, you know, no radio signal. Maybe you're between mountains. Mm-hmm. There's one stretch of road in New Hampshire I immediately thought of when you said this topic to me. That is, every time I drive past it at night alone, I get spooked. I get scared. And I'm like a smart, you know, I consider myself to be like a rational, skeptical, smart person, you know, but it's just being alone in this area. And like you said, you know, if anything happened, if my car broke down in that stretch of road, I'd be screwed. You know what I mean? Between it's the stretch of road between Newport and Sunapee, New Hampshire. It is, again, it's just super wooded and everything else. It's so scary. So scary.
But that's it, right? I mean, that's the thing that's so scary is it's like everything's normal 1 minute, right? And you have kind of control over your surroundings and self in 1 minute. And you're just doing something that's really mundane, like driving a car. And it's not like you're driving in a storm or you're driving, you know, and there's through a haunted neighborhood or anything. It's just sort of this mundane thing. And then all of a sudden something happens.
Yeah.
See, and I appreciate the idea of the freeform terror, right? You just get this impression of something, or maybe you see a shadowy figure and it feels like it's coming towards you. But the good thing about Riverdale Road is it has a lot more concrete stuff for you as well. So that's too vague. Okay, well, how about the Phantom Camaro? Bum, bum, bum. Now, this one is, I'm going to admit, is my favorite of all the stories. And I'm kind of maybe I'm, you know, spoiling it by telling it too soon. But this, to me, embodies so many good urban legends and tropes and sort of this general John Carpenter, Stephen King 70s feel about horror and terror. And this is a story that says, like, back in the 1970s, a black 703 Camaro wrecked along Riverdale Road because there are a lot of blind turns. The driver perished in the wreck, but his ghost remains. If you're driving late at night and you see a Camaro pulled over to the side of the road with only one headlight on, do not approach, do not slow down, and under any circumstance, don't race it. You'll be racing to your death. That's one quote. There's a lot of this out there with people reporting this back on Reddit. One of the quotes reported having the Camaro right behind them, and then you try and go faster, and it's still right there. One of them said, the car was getting ready for a turn, and we drove past it, and it turned behind us. About 30 seconds later, it completely disappeared. We thought it turned off the road. But then 3 minutes later, it was a foot behind our bumper with its brights on. We were driving at 70 miles an hour down Riverdale, and it didn't stop chasing us until a car passed us in the opposite direction, and at that point, it vanished. So again, you have sort of this urban legend of the one headlight, right? The one headlight car. It's a Camaro from the 70s, which if, again, you're familiar with the 703 Camaro of the 1970s, is just a beautiful classic muscle car. You know, they perished in the wreck, but they're still seeking vengeance, you know, or their essence is still out there ready to chase you down this dark, treacherous rural road. And to me, that is just... that's just like canon, right? That's like, that is, if you're going to have a ghost story, you gotta have that. There's something really just very, I hate to say American to it, but there's just something very classic about that.
It is very American, I would say. It's like up there with like the, you know, the ghost train and, you know, some of the other stuff even that's on Riverdale Road. The idea of like a ghost car, like a ghost vehicle, because, you know, we put so much personality and emotion into our cars, especially, I think, in the United States, where like a flashy car like that is often associated with like youngness and virility.
Yep.
Right. So this is like, you know, James Dean careening off the road or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. It's such a, oh, my God.
Well, and what's awesome is it has always been the Camaro, right? So it does have this personality. So you've got, you know, this general sense of foreboding, you know, this weird, I feel more weird, ill, and sort of scared on one side of the road than another. But then on the total opposite end, you have like a very specific car with one headlight that wants to chase you.
Yeah.
Right?
So scary.
But again, I guess, so still not impressed with the ghost Camaro? All right, fine. Not your cup of tea? Very well, Ven. Then how about we stop off at Jogger Hill? So further down Riverdale Road on a dirt road located just beyond 120th Avenue, the story is that a car hit a jogger on the dirt road at the crest of the hill. Now the driver panicked and sped off and left the jogger there to die. And now their ghost haunts that area and tries to attack any motorist that parks at the crest of that hill just to admire the view. So if at about, you know, 120th Avenue, you come to a dirt patch in the dead of night and you park on the crest of that hill, turn off the engine, turn off your headlights, you wait patiently, you will hear the footsteps of someone running. And then, according to rumor, someone or something will begin to bang on your car. And there have even been claims of handprints appearing on your fogged windows.
It's so scary.
So here's scary. The flip side, right? So here's the what's kind of a nice bookend to this is to the Camaro is like, so here's someone who was hit by a car, right? A jogger who is now just, you know, waiting to take their revenge on someone, you know, and has, you know, again, you can hear the footstep, which I think is a pretty good, that's a nice touch, right? Is you can hear them running, getting closer. And then someone banging on your car. And again, from Reddit, which I know is maybe not the most reliable, you know, of accuracy. But
what
still,
do you mean?
But still, you know, if you're going for context, this is good. Back in about 2008, a few friends and I went and parked on Joggers Hill with the windows down. I was in the front passenger seat and we heard a loud heartbeat and foots getting closer. I couldn't move my arm that was on the door or talk. And all I could do was watch something move in the side view mirror. Okay, so that's, you know, that's nice. That's what I'm loving about it is it's got, like, again, it's got all of the good horror tropes.
The thing I like about this one, too, is you are, again, this takes, like, active participation.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you can, again, that you can make it happen on demand is such an important part to these things that, mm-hmm. you know, if someone just says like, I had a weird vibe in my house or whatever, like, all right, fine. But if something keeps happening again and again and again, that's the real mark of a good ghost story. You know, that's the best one. That's, oh God, Marie, this one was spooky. This is a spooky one.
And the thing is, it's like, there's a lot of little things too, right? That I didn't really get a lot of time to research, but there's bloody handprints that will appear on traffic signage, right? So there's like other little visual stuff that people talk about. There's orbs, there's strange lights. But one of the things too, that is, probably that besides the Ghost Camaro and Joggers Hill that Riverdale Road is known for is the Gates of Hell.
All right, let's get into the Gates of Hell after this break. I need to get in my blankie. I'm too spooked.
All right.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So one of the most common stories is the ghost lady or the woman in white who is walking by these rusted out gates along Riverdale Road. And they're actually out there still. And they're just sort of, again, like a physical remnant of a lot of things in a rural road that were built and are aging. There's a lot of fencing and everything else. But now you see this woman in white wandering along, and she is the wife of this man who built a mansion and then lost his mind and set fire to that mansion with his family sleeping inside. Now, he was this man whose wife is now wandering looking for him and looking for her family, was never caught or charged. So as you pass along and you see her, the legend is that that is the wife who could appear in your side view mirror looking for help, right? At the gates of hell. So this gives you a little bit more, maybe a little bit more historical context. So there's an actual physical artifact. There's these gates, and there is a fire or a mansion that was burnt down. So the interesting thing about this is, yes, there really was a mansion and there really was a fire. It was called the Wolpert Mansion, and it was at 9190 Riverdale Road. And the history of it is actually kind of interesting. It's David Wolpert was born in 1883 in Ohio, and then in 1859, he began to move west with the gold rush. He followed the Santa Fe Trail to New Mexico and then came back up to Pikes Peak. And he was included in the party of 16 men who traveled to North Park, north of Denver, to what is now the Breckenridge area, seeking gold.
Sausage fest.
as it was back in the gold rush days. But thank you, yes. Wolpert came to Denver and actually started to accumulate wealth. He built the Clayton block in Larimer Street, downtown Denver, which is historic and pretty well known. He followed the Platte River north 9 miles, and on a piece of land he bought in the 1850s, he built a house. So he acquired the land patent from the U.S. government, and his land totaled 145 acres on both the east and west side of Riverdale Road. So Riverdale Road was still out there. It was, at that point, I'm sure, just a dirt road, but he actually was able to purchase this relatively good-sized portion of land. He married in 1864 to Catherine Henderson, whose family is from the town of Henderson, and who it is clearly named after, and they had a son and two daughters. So Mr. Woolport was a celebrated agriculturalist in his lifetime, and they lived in this mansion for about 50 years. He finally died in 1909 and is buried at Riverside Cemetery, which is another semi-spooky place. So the house itself is a mansion pretty much in the strictest sense, in that it was a better house than most people were living in at the time, right? It was, considering when it was built and who built it, it would also have been considered one of the more interesting homes in Colorado at that time. It was two stories. It had other structures around it. And it, while you don't think of it as like a mansion, as in the sprawling mansions with multiple stories and et cetera, it was, for being in the middle of pretty much nowhere around it, it was a really pretty nice house and would have had pretty good historical precedence at that time. There is a complete architectural history that is attached to the house. It's been added onto over the years. There was a brick barn built in the same period. And so again, there would have been a lot of interest and a lot of renown around just that structure alone. From one of the articles that I read, it said, there is history in human interest rumors alone. It has been said that the mansion was a drover's inn for cowboys, a gambling den in the 1920s, a house of prostitution, a racehorse ranch, and it is said by one of its owners that they became drunk and lost the mansion in a card game. There have also been rumors of murders being occurred on the land.
What's interesting, if you look at the house, because you can Google what the house looked like,
mm-hmm.
right, or what the area looked like, I guess. It's not, the David Woolport house isn't like super duper. I mean, it's not what you today consider to be like a mansion, like you said.
Right.
You know, but you can definitely see how in this, because again, a lot of us, I think, forget that like Colorado was the West, you know, it was the Wild West until like the 1930s. So it's pretty fascinating that it was this, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. It's weird looking.
It's if you look at it now, it's really plain looking. Again,
yes.
It's a two-story home. However, at the time, with nothing else going on around it, it did garner all of this other attention, which is, again, just sort of maybe what is leading to the Riverdale Road overall, right? Like, starting in the 1920s and even before that. Like, it was a den of iniquity, right? There were murders, you know, occurring on the land. It was a house of prostitution. It was a gambling den. So there's all of this stuff that has, you know, that ties back to Colorado history,
mm-hmm.
you know, over time, that is just kind of adding to its historical significance, right? So it's interesting that may be sort of the linchpin that's driving everything else, that people are, all the other kind of urban legends that come up around this 11-mile stretch of two-lane blacktop.
Right. It's like that is the center point that makes all of it happen.
Yes. But, and again, because maybe, again, it's just started from these really kind of basic, you know, this basic historical precedent of this beautiful home being built there. But again, like the person who lived in it they were relatively uneventful. They came with the gold rush, but it was relatively uneventful. But then, 1975, when the chicken house, so it had a structure, like a large chicken coop that it is referred to as a chicken house, burnt down. The fire department came, extinguished the fire, but the two-story brick home was severely damaged. And the newspaper, Denver Post, reports at around 1 a.m. on November 28th, 1975, a home located at 9190 Riverdale Road became engulfed in flames. The flames Friday left only remnants of the main building plus a smaller structure in the rear. No fatalities or injuries were reported, and the home had not been inhabited at the time of the fire. So I think what, you know, you go in and you look at some more of the historical documents and people who reported back on it is the fire department, you know, put in a report to the county health authority saying that the house was a fire hazard and a danger to the community. The health department also ordered that the owner should dismiss their tenants. So this is where it's a little confusing, and I couldn't find anything that was really clarified in that the Denver Post said that it had not been inhabited. However, it sounded like the health department said get rid of the tenants. You can't move in there because now it's like, it's, you know, completely burnt down practically. So when they moved, when it became vacant, is when heavy vandalism started, and it's now in desperate need of restoration. And it was, you know, basically it's a historical site.
Sorry, restoration.
Oh my God. Okay.
It's, you're good. No, you're good.
Oh my God. Okay. The mansion is now in desperate need of help and restoration. It's a historical landmark, and basically there's been a lot of local activity in Adams County to have it restored. One of the articles that I found that I thought was sort of interesting that talked about the chicken house, right, that is sort of left over, was by someone named Charlie Perez, who said, back in 1994, my friends and I went to the chicken coop many times. There were five very large round buildings all connected by a tunnel system. The cages were torn out long ago, and obviously there had been a fire. Inside, there were a lot of demonic-looking graffiti. We often found headless animals, mostly birds, lying on the concrete pylons in the center of the building. It always felt spooky there.
And you can actually see some of those photos. Like, you can see pictures of, like, besides just the house itself, like, what it looks like now that it's been burnt down. You can also see, like, if you Google, like, the Riverdale Gates of Hell or even the Riverdale... just Riverdale Road, like, it is, yeah, it's not good.
No, but it's the thing being is, like, I think that it's all explainable, right? Like, you had this house, you know, this house had a history anyways that kind of got almost built up into urban legend in its day, back in the, you know, the turn of the century all the way to the 20s and even to this day. And now you kind of have just sort of almost what I would assume is kind of like a snowball effect of it had this history. It got burnt down. It had what, again, agriculturally is probably pretty common use, which is, you know, chicken coops, a chicken house. And of course, it has to be covered because of snow, et cetera, whatever. But now there's like graffiti and it becomes sort of this satanic, you know, the satanic element to it with satanic graffiti and things like that. And I think that to me, it's just sort of interesting that historically you can track sort of these events all the way to the 19, until now, pretty much.
So what's interesting actually is, if you go on some of the articles about it, right? Mm-hmm. They talk about some of the people, like some of the people who live there supposedly commented. So this is from like 2020. So on that Denver Library website, mm-hmm. some of the comments here are, so this one person here saying, I won't say their name, but they say, I grew up in this house. What wonderful memories. Behind the house near what we called the sunroom was a dungeon. At least that's what we called it. Also, two-room building was on the east side. And then someone else comments saying, I lived in this house 1952 to 57, left and joined the Navy. This other commenter is my sister. And then someone else says here from the same family, says, I used to live, what do they say? Hold on, let me find it again. Oh, here. My family lived in this house. It was so beautiful. A black fireplace was in the living room. The stained glass windows were amazing. I have pictures of me by the fireplace, many wonderful memories. My folks rented the house and farmed the land. So in theory, these are the people who lived there when the fire happened. And there was when there was the fire that started and maybe...
By the madman. Yeah, and the woman in white.
Right, by the madman, or maybe just buy an oven.
Natural occurrences. So, but really, I mean, a lot of it is like, again, if you go back and you try and document, like, when did something happen or what could have started this? That's, you kind of don't have a lot of, a crash, a Camaro crash, or, a hit and run, or things along those lines that you could clearly say, all right, well, that's evidence, right? Now, I will say that there is one exception to this that I do think is very strange, that is not talked about in any of those articles that are online about Riverdale Road. And it actually is from a newspaper. It's from the Daily Sentinel, which is in Grand Junction, from February 28th of 1980. And it says, Lee Padell of Clearfield, Utah, was driving east on Riverdale Road, a mile west of the Webster River, when he saw a creature that looked very much like the legendary Bigfoot. I didn't believe in them, but I sure do now, he said. Padilla said the creature ran in front of his headlights. The thing was very graceful. I would say it weighed about 600 pounds. It crossed the road from north to south, and I would estimate that it was running at about 35 miles an hour. I saw it for maybe 4 or 5 seconds. Padilla said that he and J.W. Barker of Northern Ogden went back to the site Monday night to check for tracks. None were found.
So maybe some skinwalker activity too, Marie.
Boom! So I'll tell you what you got. You got a little bit of everything coming out of this, right? You've got weird feelings. You got the ghost Camaro. You got the ghost jogger, the woman in white, the gates of hell. And the Grand Junction's Daily Sentinel is to be believed, Bigfoot.
You know what's so funny is... So when I was a kid, we had an area like this. We had a bunch of areas like this in Staten Island, mm-hmm. And I remember I was with my dad. He was a security guard for a little bit of time. And the area of Staten Island that he was a security guard on was like, it's a very rich, very rich for the United States part of New York City. And so and there's a lot of wooded areas and stuff around there. And so one of the areas he used to say, that they had found the rumor in the area was that there were satanic groups of kids that would go out into the woods and have parties and go crazy and whatever.
Oh, satanic youth.
Well, and then when I was in high school, that was like one of the places you'd go to drink, mm-hmm, and smoke, and like where your parents wouldn't find you. So it's so funny to me that there's these, these areas, like there's even a place here in Waltham. I was out looking for somebody's lost cat, and it's like in a kind of a community, like a housing community. And so there's a park, and you go up the hill in the park, and you go to an area that I guess used to be like a basketball court. And mm-hmm. on that old basketball court, on the old blacktop, there is someone like with graffiti, like put a pentagram,
That's totally.
And it's like, that's how these rumors start, but I would have been that idiot kid with the spray paint.
Oh yeah.
Putting the pentagram, being like, haha, this is going to spook out the nerds.
Totally. And I just think that, again, it's just so, to me, the thing that is so fascinating is it's this stretch of highway, right? Or not even highway, it's just a road, right? But like, it has got huge amount of traction online, but no real source information on it. It's all kind of websites about the most haunted, the most spooky, the most this. And it's written about a lot. And to me, it's so weird because when you actually are looking at it, it's just a really mundane, you know, it's really mundane. But then, you know, and then you're kind of like, well, it's all this. But then all of a sudden you just find this one little article that's like Bigfoot. You know, and I'm like, and again, like this guy doesn't have any, you know, Lee Padella of Clearfield, Idaho, doesn't have any skin in the game for any of this stuff. Right. So it's again, like if you take him at his words, like he saw something and he says it's pretty big, 600 pound, 35 miles an hour. That's whatever. Right. That's a pretty sizable, whatever he saw was a pretty sizable thing. So I just, to me, it's like, man, you get like 99.9% way, you know, through saying, okay, it's an urban legend. It's based on history. And then you just get this little 1% that's just like, meep, meep, which is weird.
It reminds me of like stories about like Dead Man's Curves.
Oh yeah, right?
So
good tropes.
So for listeners that don't know what those are, or maybe aren't from the United States, where it's kind of a more like common, it's more of a common thing here, I think, just like what it's called. I think in the UK, they're called like hairpins or like switchbacks or something like that. But essentially, it's these areas of highways. So the United States, I think just generally around the world, there are a lot of roads that are like actually just dark. You can't see what's ahead of you because of how dark and how, you know, well, what's the word? Like if there's no moon or no stars out that night, if it's cloudy or whatever, it's pretty close to pitch black at night when you're driving. And so it's really easy for stuff to come up on you out of the road without you realizing it. And so some of the most dangerous versions of this in the US, at least, are areas of highway where like you're bombing down the road at 60, 70 miles per hour. And suddenly like a mountain or a hill comes up out of nowhere. You need a turn, but again, you're driving, it's late at night, you're listening to music, you're whatever, you're messing around with stuff. If you're not fully aware, this thing comes out of nowhere and suddenly you're like careening over the edge or you hit a tree or whatever. And there's a couple of them around there. There's like a lot. I've always thought of them as being around like California and like, yeah, Colorado and all of these other areas that are sort of, you know, out west more. Like when I think of them, I think of them being out west. But they're, you know, again, like a real danger for people.
Yeah, like, and they're agree. Like it's got the hairpin or what they call the blind turns. But it's like there's a lot of blind turns out there that aren't, you know, that don't have hauntings associated with it too, which I think is just sort of this weird mix, right? Like, what came first? Was it the urban legends or the sort of the historic event? And I think, like I said, it's like, well, you can kind of tie it back to the Wolpert Mansion and sort of it happening there. But man, that's, you know, it's to me, it's just, again, a perfect Colorado horror in that it is something mundane. You think you know what you're getting yourself into, and then suddenly you don't.
So scary, Marie.
Oh, God, so scary. I know. And we're just getting started with our hometown horrors.
All right, dear listeners. Next episode, we'll be back with another hometown horror.
Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at teamgiantsquid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Yes, we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indie. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.